Time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan joins us. Hello there, Eric.
How are you?
Well, a sad day for us music fans.
I'm a little despondent, I must admit. For those who don't know, I play guitar. Not like that, but I played guitar for the better part of my life, and I'm in a band. We cover Van Halen all the time. Again, I don't play guitar. My guitarist, Dave Higgins, actually plays the actual hard parts. I just try to imitate Diamond Dave, which is hard enough in itself. I don't do the leaps, though. Not anymore. That's a story. That's not important. That's not important. But the point is, no, I was devastated. I mean, my older brother, who's about 14 years my elder, slipped me 1984, the album 1984, when I was young, and you know, it was one of those like, here, you know, this will change your life sort of thing. He didn't say it, which is good because that's cheesy and cliche. But yeah, I mean, it was amazing, and the same brother, I remember when he was building a bar down the middle of our field in New Jersey. Yes, there are fields in New Jersey, at least there were. And OU812 had just come out, and that is the album with Sammy. And we were listening to it. I was like, is this that band that you gave me that tape of? doesn't... huh. anyway, since then, I've discovered the entire catalog. I celebrate the entire catalog. I do own Van Halen 3, which was Gary Cherone from... See, I loved Extreme. And I read, you know, being a guitarist, I read a lot of, you know, guitar magazines and all this gobbledygook. And I remember reading, and of course, this is, speaking of cliches, this is like what everybody says with their new singer, right? We're writing the best music Van Halen has ever written. Like, it should have been a warning sign. Like, now I'm old enough, in retrospect, I know, like, don't buy that album. If they're telling you this is the best music they've ever come up with, you know it's a lie. Because, I mean, like, you know, Black Sabbath, Paranoid was literally written because they were like, we need 2 minutes more of stuff. Like, all right, and they took a lunch break and did it. You know, that's how you write great music, is on a lunch break. But yeah, no, that's a bummer. Although, as anybody who knows Eddie Van Halen knows, I don't think there's a picture that exists of him without a lit cigarette. So, you know, it's no surprise. Anyway... So we're talking North American viticulture. We talked California, and so now this month is for everything else. Why do we do so much for California? Well, California produces, in any given year, 80 to 89% of all the wines that the U.S. makes. So it deserves its own month if we're going to celebrate our country. So that's why, just in case anybody's like, well, you're a little Cali-centric. I'm like, well, that's because that's how our wine industry is. Speaking of which, a lot of you actually have been really cool. And I shouldn't say this, but I'm always you know, fascinated that people are passionate about the wine industry the way I am. And a lot of you have reached out and asked about specific wineries that you know that we work with. The fact of the matter is that... there's parts of the fires out there in California, by the way, that are still not contained. They're doing their best. It's sort of like that, you know, when you talk about the whole sports equation with millionaires versus billionaires. I mean, these are literally, you know, very often millionaires and billionaires who are losing their estates. So it's tough to like be like, eh. However, they are really great wines, and it's important to bear in mind that the great estates in any part of the world, Burgundy, Chile, Australia, whatever, they're all owned by rich people. It's very rare that you get rich in the wine industry. It's usually that you are rich and then you get into the wine industry. So there have been some losses to some of what I would call America's sort of first growths, cane, Vineyard 7 and 8, that are Napa kind of royalty. So just for anybody who's keeping notes, it's still happening. But on to the rest of America. So currently, as far as I'm aware, you know, things do change from minute to minute these days, but currently all of our states produce wine. We are the fourth largest wine production producing nation in the world, we are right after Italy, Spain, and France. And we love our wine. The Vikings who came here dubbed us Vinland. They found wild growing grapes and dug that because they knew that they could get drunk off them if they did the right things. They didn't bring the vitis vinifera that we all like to drink. That was brought by some of the other European immigrants. But frankly, this has always been, you know, a country that kind of likes to get its wine on. And as I said, every state makes it. And if you're curious who clocks in at last, my latest research indicates that both Delaware and Mississippi are coming in with both with two wineries. So way to go, Delaware and Mississippi. Even you're in on the party. But places like Alaska has eight or nine, I could not confirm nor disconfirm, but 8 or 9 wineries, you know. So it's happening in extreme places as well as places you'd figure. And, of course, bear in mind, as we always talk about, you know, vines don't really like it super fertile, right? They like the struggle. They like the really steep, slaty Mosel slopes. They like the cold northern, you know, Argentine mountains and stuff like that. So places that are super fertile, like Mississippi, for instance, or Florida or Louisiana or whatever, they're not really suited for great, you know, wine making, but they forage on anyway. Obviously, and we've talked a little bit about this, but I always like to mention it, the first efforts were obviously on the East Coast, and they encountered the phylloxera louse, so that really sort of stunted efforts on the East Coast. And as we had talked about when we started talking about California, it was really on the West Coast that the vines started to take hold because the phylloxera louse, which ate the rootstocks, right, wasn't there. So that was really where the first successful plantings were. But it's always fun to sort of mention in this sort of overview segment that the first commercially successful wine in America was Piscataqua, which originated in Ohio. So if anybody is familiar, in fact, I think we have had at varying points the Catawba grape represented at Bangor Wine and Cheese. It's not grown a lot anymore. It's one of these kind of awkward hybrid grapes that makes kind of weird wines. Sometimes they're elegant, sometimes they're not as elegant. But I suppose if you throw enough sugar and carbonation on it, it could be easily America's first commercially successful wine. I wasn't around to try it when it was first commercially viable, but that's my hunch. It was probably sweet and bubbly, and people were like, "Hey." Which is cool. You know, it helped establish a wine industry, so that's useful. But I think today we'd probably find it sort of on the level of like a Matus or a Lancers or something like that from Portugal. Important places we're gonna specifically talk about Oregon and Washington, which are, you know, sort of inarguably the next two most important wine producing parts of America. But I wanted to sort of step away from the West Coast for a little bit. And I know we're running out of time, but I did want to mention, of course, that, you know, the places that you want to sort of focus in on really mirror the regions of Bordeaux, of Alsace, successful sort of French areas. So you're talking Virginia, the Mid-Atlantic region, you're talking Long Island, producing some really interesting Chards and some Bordelaise wines. You're talking the Finger Lakes regions of New York, obviously, with some wonderful, more Germanic wines, which are grown along those steep slopes in the Finger Lakes. So just things to think about as you think about American viticulture, and we'll talk more about it this month. I did want to mention before we wrap up that we are going to be increasing our online presence in anticipation of the holidays at Bangor Wine and Cheese. So if there's anything that people would like to offer as suggestions, ways that we can better serve people. If perhaps there's a second wave of COVID that forces people to go back to you know, curbside only, or things that you'd like us to do that will make your experience better, do please in the next couple of weeks let us know, because we're really trying to anticipate what the unanticipatable, I suppose, as it were. So do drop us a line or, you know, Facebook message or whatever. And remember, if you want to come on into the shop, please do. We're open 7 days a week again. Just wear a mask, and we're happy to help you out. And otherwise curbside, all that good stuff. And I suppose I'm sure I'm out of time, so I will let you all go with the thought that I will talk to you next week. We'll talk about the Willamette Valley from Oregon, which again is still kind of currently on fire. So I'll update you on that and all the good stuff that you can find from Oregon.
In the meantime, just look for Eric waiting at the River Styx.
That's where else do you hang out? You know, I'm a maudlin guy.
That was a great picture.
Wasn't it? Oh, gosh. I mean, if you've been there, so he's referring, folks, to the fact that I was fishing on early Sunday morning with my son, and it was kind of gray and dark and started to rain, and all of a sudden from around the point comes this dark figure cloaked in black with a hood, oaring towards us. It was my wife on a paddleboard, but I'll tell you, if you use your imagination, it could send shivers down your spine.
It is 2020, after all.
Well, this is what I'm saying, and this is Maine. You know, as I've often said, Stephen King invented nothing. All he did was pay attention and put it in the prose. It's far better than mine. But it can be spooky out there at times. But, you know, nothing spookier than the stuff we're seeing out of the White House.
There you go. All right, Eric, you be well. Stay safe, and cheers, we will check in again next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Eric Mann of Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the Bottle every Tuesday afternoon. Right here on Downtown.